Welcome to the Primal Endurance Podcast. Slow down and enjoy the show, where we rap, literally, about everything you need to know. I'm your host, Brad Kearns. Are you ready? Let's go. Hey, Brad Kearns, to tell you about Organifi Green Superfood Powder. This is a great-tasting green powder. It's amazing, but true. Mix it in water, and it's delicious, so you'll use it every single day to get a nice dose of greens, especially if you're traveling, especially if you're trying to go keto and you're not eating that many carbs. This is a great way to ensure that you get all the nutritious benefits in a variety of fruits and vegetables. Mix it in your smoothie. I mix it with my ketone supplement, so even when I'm not eating, I get my greens every single day. Why don't you try some? Go over to Organifi.com, that's O-R-G-A-N-I-F-I, and enter the code PRIMAL at checkout, and you will get 15% off your first order. Enjoy! Welcome, listeners. Your host, Brad Kearns. You're probably getting sick of me doing all the Q&A and the solo interval show, so I came down to the Los Angeles area studios, joined again by our favorite recurring guest, Andrew McNaughton.
Hello.
We've been talking quite a bit offline on long drives and cell phone calls and getting into the fun topics of the day, especially with the imminent launch of the Primal Endurance Mastery course and also the development of the coaching certification course that's based on the Primal Endurance course, but going much deeper into the coach-athlete relationship and kind of the optimal way that a coach and an athlete can relate. So I thought today's show, we would kind of compare and contrast the traditional approach to training, the overly stressful approach, and then what we're advocating with Primal Endurance, where we're talking about slowing down, we're talking about being more intuitive, and kind of rejecting these pattern behaviors such as programming and robotic scheduling and trying to consistently adhere to some predetermined schedule rather than go with the flow. And I think some of the best comments I've gotten from the shows we did was your discussions about training. Now, after what, 30 years doing this, you're finally evolved to the highest level of sophistication in your training by training according to your moods and being not so dependent upon technology or upon regimented scheduling.
The regimented scheduling is difficult because it doesn't take into account the individual's anything. It's just, this is the schedule, and everybody doing this race has the same schedule, regardless of who they are, where they're starting from, and what their end goals are. And that's the fundamental problem. The training plans need to be set up in a way where you will show up at the race fit, happy, healthy, and you're way better off to be undertrained than overtrained. And it's not by a little bit, but it's substantially better off to get there excited to do the race than get there sort of drained and tired.
Okay, that's great. That's all well and good. I think that's sort of something that most endurance athletes would nod their heads to. And then we have sort of this competing mindset or this competing idea, which is that the high-intensity training delivers quick results. And we've heard this debate of quality versus quantity and people advocating for less total training time and getting faster and having better results because they go hit it hard many times. So just before we started the show, we're talking about, you know, there's certain truths to this idea that the harder and faster you train, the better you're going to race inside of a vacuum without respect to all these other variables.
So this is the way I look at it, is if you train really hard for 6 to 8 weeks, you will be fitter and faster than if you train slowly for that same amount of time. However, you also increase the likelihood of getting sick and injured and burnt out. So if you have very, very short-term goals, then that is a fine way to go. But remember, fitness and health are almost mutually exclusive, all right? And what we're trying to get here is healthy first. That's the primary goal with this, is to be healthy. And that gives you longevity. And then in the long run, longevity and consistency, you end up being fitter. Just if you want to get super fit in 6 weeks, then, you know, this is probably not the program. But if you want this to be the way you live for the rest of your life, whether that's 30 years or 60 years, then this is definitely the way to go. You will consistently get stronger and fitter, and you will more likely stay healthier, get sick less often, get injured less often, And in the long run, you will be far, far better off.
Well, I think that's how Phil Maffetone came into prominence, you know, 25 years ago and with his protege, Mark Allen. And the story that many people are familiar with was, you know, Mark was constantly getting sick and injured and breaking down. And he was halfway through his career and he was looking for a solution. And then Mike Pigg came along with the same story that he was completely fried and exhausted from all that hard training, that intense training. And Phil said, look, you know, fitness and health are different. Slow the heck down and build your aerobic base and you'll go faster and faster. But the thing that we should recognize is that these guys came to work with Phil and they were top guys in the world. I mean, Mark Allen was the number one guy in the world and he was complaining about illness, injury, burnout, inconsistency, and so forth. And Mike Pigg was battling those digestive troubles and constant, you know, battering of the body.
And Mike Pigg was number one in the world too. I think he was
unbeatable.
But in 88, he was number one guy.
Yeah. But he, you know, he kind of saw this, this pattern, this undesirable pattern of training being too difficult, being too mentally and emotionally draining because having to push yourself constantly. And I can relate the same thing. And I talk in detail about the book about how, you know, slowing down midway through my career and breaking free from some of these high-intensity group workouts that we were doing too frequently and pushing ourselves too hard enabled me to kind of reawaken my enjoyment of the sport and, you know, reconnect with the pleasure of running on a running trail without timing yourself or checking your mile splits or trying to stay with a pack that was going too fast. But the original approach works very, very well up to a certain point. And oh, by the way, if you're genetically gifted like Pig or Allen and you can handle these massive workloads and win races while you're frying yourself in training, you're going to be okay for a certain point in time and then you're going to hit this wall.
Yeah, and regular people hit it much sooner than the 4 or 6 years that it took, you know, Mike and Mark to really, you know, run themselves down.
And I should also project that even the average person who's seemingly thriving with this high-intensity training pattern and winning medals and qualifying for the age group team and whatnot, you know, there's a clear contrast between fitness and health, like you said, and I'm going to argue that these are the people that are walking around feeling like a zombie in between their workouts or just, you know, kind of compromising their performance as a partner, parent, in the workplace and feeling tired and cranky and then coming out of it and having a great race and then going back into these high-stress lifestyle patterns.
So the way I look at it or the way I've sort of seen it in my experience is that endurance athletes in general aren't comfortable or aren't happy unless they're in a state of overtraining. That's what we think feels normal, is that sort of weight on your body where you just don't have that bounce in your step. And as soon as you have that bounce in your step, you sort of feel like you're in a taper mode or you're resting too much and you need to get on with it. And that's a hard thing to get over, because in reality, you should pretty much feel better every week, not more and more drained every week. Granted, you need to do some substantially difficult sessions at some point, but they shouldn't wipe you out for weeks. And I, you know, for Brad and I, when we were in our late 20s, we had weeks or even, you know, months at some point where we were just dragging and we were forcing ourselves to continue with the program, and we weren't recovering. And we thought that maybe we needed to train more instead of, no, we probably needed 2 weeks of movies and walking around in the backyard.
Yeah, well, we go and get our asses kicked and then shake your head and come back and go, wow, my swim split was so slow that I need to double my swimming volume and never let that happen again. And that kind of thinking, which I think everyone on the starting line shares, that type A approach where if I can enforce my will upon the planet, everything will come my way. The riches in the career path, and then in athletics, I'll just get better and better and better because I'm so willing to work hard.
And Brad and I were actually pretty good at not getting sucked into the 50 miles or whatever it was of running and 400 on the bike and swimming 25,000 like the pros do, as opposed to the pseudo pros like us. So we were actually pretty good at not getting sucked into doing that crazy amount. But still, what we did was a lot, and it would wear us out. And like everybody else, You know, you're sitting at home resting, thinking, gosh, everybody else is out doing a 100-mile ride today. I should be doing something. And the answer is, no, you should be doing what's best for you, not what other people think is best for them, because even if they are right, it's not right for you. But more often than not, they're not right anyway for what's right for them.
Yeah, and it comes now we're coming down to where you should probably pull over if you're driving in your car, because we have to, you know, look in the mirror and ask that important question of what am I doing this for, and really what am I all about as a person and my personality and my contribution to the well-being of people that I train with and people that are looking to me for inspiration. And I think what happens is you get locked into this struggle and suffer mentality, possibly because life is too easy. And we're talking about endurance sports are populated by people that are in high professional careers, you know, knowledge workers that aren't strenuous. They're sitting in an office. They're making good money. They have free time, energy, and resources to devote to this crazy stuff. We're not talking about bricklayers out there on the starting line at Western States 100 or at the Ironman or whatever. So I think we're bringing to the table this desire to push the human limits and have all those wonderful growth experiences from doing something with your life rather than being a slacker and watching NFL on TV on Sunday. But that's where we have to figure out that balance, like you just referenced. If you really want to be good and you're telling yourself in the mirror and you're telling your friends and family and loved ones that you want to achieve peak performance, that entails, just like your quip on the trailer for the Primal Endurance course, if you want to go fast, you have to rest more.
Yes. And one of the things that I tell the people I work for is remember why you're doing this. This is because you love it. This is what you do with the free time. This is what you do for enjoyment. This is what's supposed to be fun. And fun is always, well, it's always more fun to go fast. So if you can balance out, you know, the slow part and going fast at the right times, you'll go fast in races. And I promise you, that's more fun. It's always more fun to have less time in a race than more time in a race.
Yeah, I mean, you get a payoff. So we have to recognize that when you're overtraining and you're robotic and you're trying for consistency, you get this psychological payoff in your brain when you can come home and take your pen and paper and write that big number in the training log and then add it up at the end of the week and you've hit 50 or 300, like the reference points for the young triathletes trying to aspire to these legends of the sport. And it was complete nonsense. And it only really clicked and hit home for us when we started beating these guys that were written up in the magazine for their prodigious training loads. And so when you get back to your own personal reference point of what's fun and what works for me and my lifestyle right now and my other particulars and responsibilities, then you can regain control over your experience in the sport and arguably perform better. But I don't think anyone really deeply believes that if they cut their training in half or they slow down the pace of all their aerobic workouts that they're going to go faster because they're going to have a better attitude, more fun, more enjoyment. But until you access that portal, you're stuck in this kind of peer group, competitive peer group, compare and measure and judge yourself by how you stand up to others like Chevy Chase and Caddyshack when Judge Smale says, what do you mean you don't keep score playing golf? How do you compare yourself to other golfers? And Chevy Chase said, by height.
So one of the things that I remember talking to Simon about, Simon Whitfield, the guy who won the Olympics.
Some guy.
He won the Olympics in 2000 and was second in 2008. When I was coaching him before that, I said, whenever you're building a training group, make sure you're the best person there. Because it's easy to go hard. But it's hard to go easy if everybody else is going hard. And if you look back at my life, or if I look back at my life, you know, other than Brad, that was pretty much the way it was. And Brad and I trained on key workouts together or long, easy things together. We did our long, easy runs where we basically went out and chatted for 2 hours. We did our six-hour bike rides where we basically chatted with each other. And then every so often, we would race up a hill. But the people we were with, you know, it would be their hard day when we were chatting. They would be working hard. And if they worked too hard, if they tried to make us work too hard, you know, we would punish them later.
Like, you mean when there was a number on your body? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, exactly, you know. There was lots of people who didn't really understand after training with us how we beat them in races.
Yeah, so it's a good chance to check on the possibility that you have an overly competitive mindset, or what I like to call misplaced competitive intensity. Because when you're on the starting line and you've put all the time and energy into this and you've dragged your family across the globe to go watch a 12-hour race where they're going to be sitting around with all the focus on you, you know, it's okay to be competitive. It's okay to be into yourself and, you know, want to deliver peak performance. But when that competitive intensity is unregulated and it spills out onto, let's say, the River Parkway Trail, when some clown passes you and he's wearing casual clothes and you can't stand it because you're in your racing gear with your $8,000 bike, and so you give chase and easily show your superiority over the guy on the mountain bike with the cigarettes on his arm, those kind of behaviors are oftentimes in conflict with your stated goals, which are, oh, I mean, I've coached so many people, and you get the questionnaires, and you always see these themes like, I want to be a role model to my kids. I want to have a nice, healthy balance to my life because I'm so busy at work and I like to get an outlet and enjoy nature and push my body and love the experience of racing. And that's all wonderful. But when your behavior is in conflict with those stated goals, then you're living in an incongruent manner with your stated goals. And that leads to unhappiness rather than happiness and fulfillment.
And even if you're doing a long race, you know, 10 hours or one that's, you know, 5 hours or even one that's 2.5 hours, you have to go the appropriate pace. So it's really not that different in training. You have to go the appropriate pace for that day in training, just the way you have to go the appropriate pace for your distance in a race. I mean, you're not going to go out at 2.5 hour pace if your race is 10 hours long. It just doesn't make any sense. You won't make it, you know, and it'll be a miserable experience. And you have to look at your training that same way. You know, some days for training, you're better off just going slow. It was stressful in many other areas in your life, and you don't need to add physical stress on top of that because your body can't differentiate. It just knows stress. And if you're not sleeping well, then there's another sign, you know, chill out, relax more. You know, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean you can't exercise, but just exercise in a very responsible manner so it mellows you out and helps your systems, you know, calm down so that you can, in fact, sleep, and then you'll wake up and you'll be better the next day or the next day if you get another good night's sleep.
Yeah, let's examine that more deeply because I think that's one of the most fundamental laws of nature that is very important to understand, and we disregard it so much. So I like to envision the scales of justice, the blind lady, the statue, where she has the two trays on either side, and it represents the fairness of the justice system, whatever, although you just got off a jury and I'm wondering if the fairness of the justice system is there because, first of all, they let you on the jury and then you weren't foreman. And so if you're on a jury and not foreman, then you're a wise guy in the background, brainwashing everybody. Isn't that what happened with your jury experience?
I have no further comment on that.
Oh, that's right. We can't talk about it. So you have the scales of justice, and on one side is stress and on one side is rest. And we oftentimes like to count different forms of stress as balancing out. Like, work is so stressful, but fortunately I'm a runner and I run with my running group 5 nights a week, and that balances my workplace stress. And that might be very well true on certain levels, but those are both on the same side of the scales of justice. And on the other side is the bird watching society, which meets Saturday morning at the same time you meet with your hardcore competitive bike group to do 60 miles and kill each other on the hills. Bird watching goes on the other side. Sleep goes on the other side. Meditation, yoga, you know, mild yoga, not the sweaty, hot, crazy stuff that burned out our Primal Blueprint podcast host, Elle Russ, was trying to live a healthy life, and she was going to Bikram yoga 2 hours a day, every day, in the hot thing. And she might as well have been a crazy endurance marathon athlete because she was frying her body from something that we all usually believe is restorative. So we could call it like restorative yoga, meditation, sitting on a couch and reading, taking a walk with your dog and looking at the stars. These things are rest and restoration, recovery, and everything else is stress. So even your boring job where you're sitting in a cube and looking at spreadsheets, you're still kind of in a, you're in an unnatural setting. You're not breathing fresh air. You're not being exposed to sunlight. You probably have annoying people to work with. And we're throwing everything on one side of the scales of justice. No matter who you are and how tough you are, you can't get away from that equation. And if you don't get away from that equation over the duration of years and decades, you're going to end up, in my opinion, this is why we have epidemic disease decline, dysfunction, accelerated aging patterns, and all the stuff that we talk about as the foundation of Primal Blueprint and trying to honor our hunter-gatherer ancestors rather than be in the go-go-go rat race at all times without an off switch.
And also on the opposite side of the stress side, if you are in good enough shape where you can go for a light, easy jog, that could fit in there, or an easy, easy bike ride. One of my athletes, on her easy days, she goes out and mountain bikes with her 10-year-old daughter, which is perfect because she gets time with her daughter, and it's playful, and it's emotionally rejuvenating and physically rejuvenating, and it's wonderful, you know? And so you can add those things too if you're really, you know, hyper about doing one of the sports, you can. I came from swimming this morning and I swam on my own because the group sometimes makes me go too hard. And so I'm just swimming on my own and I'm swimming, oh, at least 10 seconds or 15 seconds, 100 slower than I do with the group. And I'm just enjoying it and going through the motions and, you know, I'm still getting my swimming in. I'm using the swimming muscles. I'm making sure my stroke is good. I'm not being lazy in that respect. I'm just not trying that hard. I'm keeping my heart rate below 120.
That's good to make that distinction because we all know how much we love getting out there and doing the exercises. So there's this nice cutoff point that we try to emphasize as much as possible, that aerobic maximum heart rate. And so I'll say if you're doing an aerobic session, it can quite likely help you balance that scales of justice and balance the higher stressful workout efforts to a certain extent. But when you get really fit, like Zach Bitter was just talking about on Trail Runner Nation podcast and talk about on their Primal Endurance videos, you know, this is a world national champion 100K and set the American 100-mile record running 100 miles on a track in 11 hours and 45 minutes. Divide that on your calculator, that's like 7-minute miles all bloody day, 12 hours. Okay, he's so fit that when he runs up at his maximum aerobic heart rate, he's talking about running sixes or whatever. And so that's a lot of impact. That's a lot of moving. That's a lot of calories burning. And so if he did that constantly, he would possibly be in an overstress pattern. He said that he had to back off and not worry about pegging his MAF heart rate at all these workouts. Most people are so worried and stressed that they're going too slow, and they have so much frustration built into having to limit themselves to their aerobic maximum that they're in a whole different perspective from this elite athlete, that maybe we should model his behavior and realize that not only do you not have to peg aerobic maximum, you can benefit tremendously from workouts that are way under aerobic maximum. And we've talked about this with your training where you pedaled your bike around the valley floor at 100 heartbeats a minute at a time when your aerobic maximum was 155. So you were doing a workout 55 beats below your aerobic maximum and getting so fit that you could crush it on the race course in a large portion, a large thank you to all that base training.
I still try to do that. I still try to maintain most of my workouts 10 beats below my maximum aerobic function. And then the ones that are, I'm doing tests or something, then I get close to my MAF. Or if I'm angry, then I'll go up a little there faster. But
in general,
I like to keep a 10 beat buffer.
So this, again, gets us to sort of this this crossroads where the listener's going. Listeners around the world, some of them are going, bloody heck, mate, why are you telling me to, you're telling me I'm going to be bloody walking instead of jogging, and that's no fun. And that is a very large category of endurance athletes where if you're going any significance below your maximum aerobic heart rate, all of a sudden you're a plodder instead of who you like to think you are, which is a fairly accomplished endurance athlete. I just got one of the Q&A sessions where the reader listener was saying, you know, I'm so frustrated because my aerobic heart rate is 12-minute mile, you know, and I just finished a half marathon running 8-minute miles. And that may very well be possible for so many of us to race much faster than aerobic heart rate. But then you're talking about, as we talked at the start of the show, this 8-minute mile half marathon where you're going to get another Achilles tendon injury, you're going to get sick afterward, bet, guarantee, and where you're going to head from there is probably into burnout and not participating in 2019 or whatever. So backing up, that's our opening.
So not that you won't be able to run that 8-minute mile again. You'll just do it. You know, it might take 6 or 9 months to get your aerobic base built up in a way that you can do that and it not be so high risk.
Right.
So it's just patience. It's not, you're not going to end up going slower because of this. You're going to end up being fitter and healthier and at least as fast, possibly faster, because you should be more consistent. And in general, it's consistency that makes you faster, not necessarily one or two really brutal workouts.
Yeah, I'd say most certainly faster. And I love that story about Pig and the Primal Endurance where, you know, in the old days before he embraced the aerobic training, he and Hinshaw would go flat out, whatever, 65 miles over mountains to his cabin out in the forest. And they'd get there and he would report that he would literally lay on the ground for hours after, and they'd eat everything in sight with ice cream and giant peanut butter binges and whatever, and do nothing the rest of the day except lay around and sleep and recover from this crazy effort. And his best time was 3:11 or something, which is pretty impressive. And then this was 2-3 years later, after building that base and slowing down and healing his digestive tract and all these problems that he had, he did the same route at 155 heart rate or less in 3:05. So not only was he way more comfortable and less stressful to his body, but he actually beat his time in an all-out effort from years before. So that's what I'm going to predict is, like, not only will you not go slower, it's almost certainty that you're going to go faster, barring some strange variables like you doubled your workload at the law firm or something. That's another stress factor that's not considered. But we've talked about this with Maffetone on those videos in the course. The anaerobic muscle fibers are intertwined with aerobic muscle fibers. Anaerobic muscle fibers don't need high volume of training. You can sprint once in a while, just like we talk about, and get a great effect and train those muscle fibers to fire, but they don't need over and over, day after day after day, to be trained. But when you train the aerobic muscle fibers that are intertwined, you're getting better at delivering oxygen to those anaerobic muscle fibers, exchanging the waste products, refreshing the sodium potassium pumps, and all the things that you need to do to function at a faster pace, such as you would experience in a race when you're trying to run 8-minute miles and your aerobic pace is 12-minute miles. So that slow-paced training nurtures the fast twitch fibers, even though they're not technically being used in the manner that we generally experience, which is running intervals or doing whatever. So, MacAttack, you raised your eyebrows. Like, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think you covered it all pretty well. I don't think there's much more to say. The smartest approach is the smartest approach. And what more can you say to that?
Oh, you know what else you can add to that comment about not needing to train your anaerobic muscle fibers over and over? Arguably, also, this came from one of the podcasts with Mark, one of Mark's brilliant insights, which he's famous for, sitting on his couch in Malibu. And he says, you know what? I don't even think you have to train the brain that much to suffer. The brain knows how to suffer. If I come over to your house and put a gun to your head, just random winner gets a free book and a visit from a guy with a gun who's going to make you run a marathon right now as soon as we turn this podcast off, you're going to be able to do it. You're going to be able to suffer because maybe you're not in condition, or maybe it's 104 degrees in Phoenix right now and that's where I'm visiting. But your brain in fight or flight state with those fight or flight hormones is very, very good at suffering, unless you don't take good care of yourself, and then you lose your will. One of your famous quotes from the TV interview on the race where you said you only have so many big time race efforts in you, and then you just lose your will because you don't need to go, you don't want to go that deep over and over for years and years. So we get back to this concept of, we don't really need to suffer in training like we've been conditioned to believe by our peer group and by this type A pervasive mentality that thinks more is better. And now we're left with, what are we going to do to get better? Once in a while, like you said at the outset of the show, yeah, you push yourself. You go hard. You get used to race pace, time trial. You see if your lower back can handle holding the drop position at 26 miles an hour for 45 minutes and not make it be a foreign thing to do in the race.
Oh, that would be nice. I was 21 and a half.
Okay, whatever, whatever our reference points are. But once in a while, you approximate the challenge of the race and training once in a while, and then the rest of it is this building and nurturing of not only your fitness, but your health.
Yeah, once in a while is good, because otherwise it's a real shock to breathe that hard and still have to run. But yeah, you do it a couple of times and you're good to go. Like Maffetone said, you don't need 10 weeks of track workouts to get ready for your first race. He says you really only need two or three.
So, you know, I've been talking in present tense or present terms to the competitive athlete aspiring to perform better in races and saying you have to be patient and wait a year or two for your base to build. But I also want to put in a plug for your boy Simon that you mentioned briefly, and he gave me one of the epic sound bites of all time when I was interviewing him up there. And he said, you know what? Right now, I asked him, what are you doing for fitness now? You're an ex-gold medalist. You probably don't have the competitive drive to go win your local age group 5K. I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm doing this and that. I like stand-up paddling. But he says, right now, I'm coached by my 80-year-old self. So if you think about that, and would your 80-year-old self be happy with you getting overtrained for this stupid race, or even worse, showing up at the starting line because you paid your entry fee, but you got 101 fever or you have leftover bronchitis, your 80-year-old self is going to shake his head or her head and say, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's quite insightful, that guy. He's lived a lot of lives and been through a lot of stuff, and he comes up with some good things and good things to say, and he's got some good philosophies that have obviously paid dividends over his career. He had quite a long career. I remember him winning his first World Cup in 96. And, you know, then he was in the Olympics in 2012. That's pretty good.
That's not bad for a sport that difficult. That's like being in the NFL that long. That's how difficult high-level elite endurance is.
You can say it's even harder because you can be part of a team and not be that great anymore, but you know, as an individual to go to a sport, you still have to be top in the world.
They can cover for you on defense, like Isaiah Thomas last night for the Celtics had one of the greatest offensive performances ever in the playoffs. And there was one play in overtime where he was just standing there. His man comes in from the wing, gets an offensive rebound and dunks it. And oh my God, his teammate was giving him a hard time. I'm like, wow, you're yelling at a guy that scored 54 points. That's crazy. But yeah, stay on your toes. You know, I know I'm biased here, but in my opinion, this feels like we just coughed up a landmark show because we got into that that core of your mindset and your approach to the sport, and you're making the decisions that are going to determine your destiny and whether you want to buy into the struggle and suffer mentality or whether you want to believe in a different possibility of balancing stress and rest, nurturing your health as well as your fitness in tandem rather than having them be constantly opposed. And it might be something that you might listen to over and over once a year to just keep you focused and keep you straight.
There are lots of coaches out there that would be great for you in a 4 to 6 week buildup, you know, 8 or so weeks before your big race. And the rest of the time, you would do the easy stuff just for your health and overall enjoyment of the sport. But in general, beyond that 4 to 6 weeks, it's way too hard. And is all you're going to do is, you know, increase the risk of getting injured or sick, which is, you know, you want that. You want to be well within the safety, whatever parameters there, because you don't want that. The whole idea of this, at least for me, is I love doing three sports. I love being healthy. I love being active. I like being in good enough shape. If someone says, let's go skiing for the weekend, I'm in good enough shape to go skiing, whether I've skied this year or not. I don't get to the ski hill and my legs are throbbing because I'm not in good shape. I can ski whether I've skied this year or last year or not. I can still go and ski for 3 days. It's the same. If someone says you want to go for a 200K bike ride, I'm in good enough shape where I can do that, provided I go the right pace, obviously. But I can do it. And I never ride 200K. I rarely ride over 2.5 hours. But I can do the 8-hour ride if I want to, you know? And that's the way I like to do it. And if I did the short, hard stuff, I find that I lose interest quickly. It's fun to go fast once in a while. It really is fun to go fast once in a while, but not that often. And then you add that risk, which is what we want to avoid.
Yeah, a little goes a long way when it comes to stressing your body and just trying for a peak performance effort. So, listeners, thanks for going along with us on this journey today. It was a lot of fun. Andrew McNaughton, thanks for coming back to the studio. Lots to think about here. I usually play podcasts at 1.5 speed or double speed because there's so much content and so many interesting shows and so many interesting channels. But this one, I really think you should listen to at regular speed and let it sink in.
I don't know how you can talk that fast.
It's from listening to all those shows that quickly. Again, if you have some comments, questions for us, just email info@primalendurance.fit. We'd love it if you go left a review on iTunes. For my guest, Andrew McNaughton, this is Brad Kearns. We'll talk to you next time. And you know what, Andrew? I think we should get into the last thing you said about the coaching part of it, and we'll do a whole show on coaching.
Okay.
Hi, folks. Mark Sisson here, and I'd like to tell you about my biggest undertaking yet, the Primal Health Coach Program. My mission is to create a global network of primal health coaches to help transform the health and consciousness of our communities into ones of optimal wellness and happiness. Becoming a primal health coach empowers you to take your primal passions to the next level and embark on a career you love, inspiring others to live lives of vitality and lasting wellness. If you dream of a career in health coaching, but have been held back by worries, such as the investment of time and money, then I encourage you to hesitate no longer. Health coaching is the fastest growing specialty in all of coaching. And we've created an online education program that allows you to learn from the comfort of your own home and at your own pace. The world needs primal health coaches to provide a blend of ancestral wellness solutions to the modern health crisis. The world needs you. Are you ready to become one of the world's most trusted, experienced, and knowledgeable health coaches? To learn more about this online certification program and to take the first step toward a career you love, visit primalhealthcoach.com and subscribe.